So I'm pretty sure I did at least two, if not three, opening day roster projections over at Red Reporter this spring. I know for a fact on none of them I had Jason Vossler included. I'm pretty sure for the first one, I wasn't even sure he was in camp. I'm pretty sure for the second one, I knew he was in camp, but I had to look out why he was in camp, where he came from, how the Reds managed to pluck him. But I certainly didn't have him in the mix. I had him below Chad Pinder on the veteran utility man depth chart, I guess. But some strategically timed injuries late in spring and the fact that Joey Votto wasn't going to be ready for opening day suddenly opened a window for another potentially versatile left-handed bat to get a roster spot with the Reds come opening day. And Vossler took that, and he hasn't just seized it. He's kind of become the next great diamond in the rough left-handed hitter for the Cincinnati Reds to start a season, which is something that's kind of become a little bit of a trend over the last couple of years. You know, obviously going back to Scooter Jeanette and the Reds kind of getting him off waivers from the Milwaukee Brewers. Derek Dietrich kind of fit that role for a little while as well. Even Tyler Naquin, former first-round pick for Cleveland, showed up at camp and started hitting some home runs and stayed healthier than they ever had for Cleveland. It became a little bit of a diamond in the rough signing by the Reds also. So here we are, five games in to the Cincinnati Reds 2023 season. And Jason Vossler is not just the talk of the dugout. He's pretty much the leader of the team in most statistical categories at this point, and a big reason why the Reds have won more games than they've lost so far. So we're going to touch on what's been good in the Cincinnati Reds world for the first week of this season, which has been surprisingly positive after such a miserable season last year. And given where expectations were for this season, we weren't exactly sure where things were going to go or how quickly they would get there. So we're going to break that down here on Walks Will Hunt. I'm Wick. I'm your host, joined by BK as always. BK, yep. Where did you first learn about Jason Vossler, and how were your expectations for him coming into this 2023 season?
I first learned about Jason Vossler on opening day when he made the roster and was in the starting lineup at first base.
Good for Jason. Good for Jason, yes.
Right. I saw JV initials at first base for the Reds, and I figured out, well, okay, that's same guy we always had. But, you know, if he continues to hit like Joey Votto the rest of the season, I think we'll take it.
So there's one little added tidbit of this that I really think it's worth mentioning because of the just – I don't even know what the adverb or adjective is I'm looking here to describe the number of transactions in major, major ways that the Seattle Mariners and Cincinnati Reds have been involved in over the last calendar year. The number of players they have shipped back and forth across the country with big contracts and big prospect status and all that other stuff. Jason Vossler signed as a free agent with the Seattle Mariners on January 18th of this year and was released 10 days later before spring training ever happened. So because the Seattle Mariners said Jason Vossler did not fit in our plans, either as a lefty bat or as a third base option, both of which at times have been occupied by Jesse Winker and Eugenio Suarez on their depth chart over the last calendar year, he fell to the Reds. He literally fell in the Reds' lap, who signed him to a minor league contract on February 1st of this year. So for all the things Seattle's given the Reds, like, is Jason Vossler really going to be like one of the biggest pieces?
I guess that counts, right? Yeah. I mean, it's really, you know, the Reds probably, you know, just needed a couple more warm bodies in camp at that point, you know, just to kind of get innings and get, you know, take playing time. And, you know, look at what happened and, you know, it's all credit to him and, you know, let's hope he can keep it going.
Yeah. So he was drafted as a shortstop out of Northeastern University. Third base has been his primary position in the big leagues. He's, let's see here. He has started 39 games at third base in his tenure between the, well, I guess all with the San Francisco Giants. He's been between the Cubs and the Giants and the Mariners before he got to the Reds. He's 29 years old, going on 30. And the Reds have asked him to play a lot of first base. And it looks like if everything goes to plan and Joey Votto gets back into the mix at some point soon, we'll talk about that in a little bit, he might end up getting moved and playing a little bit in left field, right field, wherever the heck the Reds can find a way to get him into the lineup. Because what he's done so far this week has not only shown that when he's hot, he can hit big league pitching, but his versatility is something I think is going to fit this Reds roster very, very well, considering how much David Bell wants to move and shake and mix and match and play matchups and play platoons and everything else. And his left-handed bat looks like it's fit the bill for that. And let's be honest here, you know, we're talking in absurdly small sample sizes here. He's had 15 plate appearances, and unlike the other JV in the Reds organization, has not walked yet. But it's not like he's been god-awful everywhere else before. He had a small sample also last year with San Francisco, played in 36 games, got 111 plate appearances, slugged 469, had an 812 OPS, like wasn't bad there. Wasn't either. Bad.
Yeah.
So
it's serviceable. And especially, you know, what you're looking for a bench bat, you know, I think that fits the bill.
Yeah. So it's looking more and more like he might be that other piece that we all kind of overlooked and is not Chad Pinder. So,
yeah, I think everybody wins in that case.
Yeah, I think so. Except for Chad Pinder. Yes. Very, very true. So 3-2 Cincinnati Reds. You know, Vosler's obviously been the standout performer, not just because of his stats in this tiny sample we're talking about, but big hits too. You know, he's got three home runs. He had the come off the bench appearance when Jose Barrero tweaked his hamstring and pinch ran and stayed in the game, hit a big 300 run home run to beat the Cubs, the team that drafted him. You know, he's certainly been the brightest, unexpected bright spot in Cincinnati Reds camp so far, but definitely not the only reason why the Reds are 3-2. And up until a bullpen implosion in their most recent game, looked like they were very much in the mix to potentially be 4-1. There have been some other good performances in camp. Like, that's, you know, for the most part, the Reds have looked like a pretty damn decent team so far, despite the fact that there were little to no expectations and not a whole lot of proven experience to let us think that this is something we should be expecting. Right. Who else? Let's just kick this off. Who else has looked good for you so far for the Reds?
I mean, you know, I think that you're just to go back to your point just now, like I think that the lack of expectations has been huge. You know, just you're not really expecting anything from this group and seeing the kind of camaraderie that they've come in with, you know, it looks like they're having fun playing baseball. And, you know, it just, I mean, when was the last time we saw a Reds team that you could say that about? Right. You know, it just, you know, they're not grinding. They're not, you know, they're playing for each other. They're, you know, it's really a lot of real positive vibes in the clubhouse and, you know, in the dugout after a home run, they got the new, you know, Viking celebration, which is great. But you know, it's really, I just think that with this lack of expectations, you see guys like Spencer Steer come up and, you know, guy with, you know, a good minor league track record came up and looked good last year. We talked about him last week, but, you know, it was really looked the part a little bit. And TJ Friedl, you know, great, like he's having a great, you know, start to his season. Jake Fraley, you know, we kind of balked when we saw that he was batting third in the lineup on opening day. And, you know, hey, he's looking pretty good now. So, you know, I think we'd take him. So, you know, I think there are bright spots, you know, kind of all around this roster on the offensive side. And then even on the defense or on the pitching side, you know, you really have the big three have looked like the big three. And that was kind of something that we were looking at. You know, between the three of them, they're at 17 in the third innings, five earned runs. I think, you know, we would take that at this point.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, I think we'll take that. And, you know, with the, you know, I think the bullpen has been, you know, obviously pretty bad.
It's been the bullpen.
I mean, it's been what they expected, right? It's been what they built. And so I think that kind of puts a damper on it. But you do have some arms that are kind of showing themselves in the bullpen. You have, you know, Derek Law has pitched 3 1/3 and hasn't given up a run yet. You know, Alexis Diaz looks every bit of the closer that he was kind of thrust into last year. Alex Young has been a great surprise from the left side. So, you know, I think that there are spots all over the place. And these are, you know, generally guys that, you know, are cast-offs, right? These are guys that, you know, Derek Law's 32 and Alex Young's 29. You know, the guys that that didn't get a shot with other organizations this year and are really making the most of this Reds roster and kind of where this Reds team is. So I think it's great to see.
Yeah, for sure. You know, you mentioned the kind of the camaraderie within the dugout right now. And, you know, obviously there are so many homegrown players that are kind of occupying key spots with the Reds. We talked about the big three of the rotation. You know, Jonathan India has looked tremendous. He's looked every bit the guy who was a four-win player and won the National League Rookie of the Year at second base. You know, for all the Jason Voslers out there, there are the Indias, the Friedels, the Stevensons, the Barreros, guys who kind of came up in the system with Hunter Green and Lodolo and Ashcraft. And, you know, when you mentioned the camaraderie thing, what popped in my head was that so much of what has been Reds rebuild seasons over the past couple of years has been some kind of makeshift pieces occupying spots while they wait for the pieces that are obviously going to get moved and see where things go from there. And last year was so much that, you know, like everybody and their brother knew that Luis Castillo and Tyler Mahle and Sonny Gray were going to be gone, much like they realized quickly that Eugenio Suarez was going to be gone. I'm not sure anybody realized Jesse Winker was going to be gone. But the big pieces you knew were going to get moved, Mike Moustakas, Shogo Akiyama, everybody knew that was going to have to get solved. And while you sit around and wait for that, it's hard to have that many pieces in a roster that's rebuilding and have any sort of like long-term look towards the future aspect to it when there's that many pieces that are just waiting to get offloaded.
Right.
There aren't any of that.
Yeah.
There are none.
I can't even think of one.
I mean, Joey Votto's the one, and he's not even there right now. He's rehabbing Louisville. So
right, but even then, you know, I still think, you know, I don't really foresee him getting moved, even if he, you know, really comes out and is hitting and all that stuff. Like it's so weird to me to think of the Reds ever trading Joey Votto.
Yeah, and not to imply that they would trade him, but he's the one piece that doesn't seem like he's going to be around necessarily beyond this year. But even then, he's looked at as an icon. He's looked at as a bit more player.
He's kind of the elder statesman and is kind of, you know, passing the torch, it feels
he's not,
like.
He's not occupying somebody else's spot. You know, he's got his spot. Yeah. So, it's cool to see that because I feel like that's definitely a vibe that they are taking and running with, which has been super, super cool. And, you know, I hope that's something that can kind of that permeates the rest of this schedule and this season beyond the fact that, you know, we kind of have to mention the obvious. It's been five games at home in Great American Ballpark with everybody healthy against the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Chicago Cubs, neither one of whom I anticipate being significantly good this year. I'm pretty sure one of my dumb predictions this year, I picked the Reds to finish better than the Cubs in the NL Central standings this year, while also picking the Reds to win 72-73 games. So this has not been the juggernaut start.
I don't think that's that hot of a take.
they haven't been on the road.
Some of these are going to be really bad. And you have the home crowd, you have opening day, you know, obviously the nice weather with that, you know, some nice weather, you know, Monday night, which was really great. You know, I think that, you know, there are still lots of good vibes with this club and with the kind of home atmosphere. And, you know, I think that I don't know if I necessarily expected the Reds to be in this position at this point. And, you know, if they go on a road trip and go, you know, 1-5, you know, maybe that changes at the park and maybe things are a little bit different. But, you know, at the same time, I think that this city is ready to just kind of ride this. And, you know, with all of the kind of positive energy around sports in this city, it's, you know, it's right there for the Reds to take advantage of. And, you know, I think the one thing that, you know, we have kind of been echoing throughout this offseason and coming into the season is, you know, really there's going to be a lot of good storylines to follow, and there are going to be reasons to watch this team this year. And I think that they're gonna have moments where they're exciting to watch. And I think we've already seen that prove out, even in, you know, the small sample size.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I mentioned, you know, that who they've played so far. It's about to get sticky real quick. I mean, they've got three against the Phillies, three against Atlanta, three against the Phillies, then three more against Tampa. They do get a road trip to Pittsburgh, but then they get the Texas Rangers, who just spent a bajillion dollars over the last two winters, signing Jacob DeGrom and Corey Seager and Marcus Semien. A little respite potentially on the road against Oakland, although West Coast trips have always been detrimental to this team. And then May rolls around, and May is just a gauntlet. It's the Padres, the White Sox, the Mets, the Marlins, the Rockies. Well, maybe not the Rockies, but then you get the Yankees, the Cardinals, the Cubs, Boston, Milwaukee, and the Dodgers, and then the Cardinals again. It gets, and they get the Astros. I mean,
you're going to have to play those teams at some point. But, you know, yeah, I think that, but I think that this was a good, like, this is a good start to the year. And this is, you know, if this ends up being the high point of the season, so be it. And I think that's probably kind of what, you know, what we were expecting, to be honest. But, you know, for now, let's enjoy it. And let's see how it goes, and let's see what these guys can do.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. I was scrolling back looking, how awful things kind of were last year when they got started and everything went so terrible so quickly. And so much of that was because who they played and when they had to play it. And they didn't open at home. Yeah. They opened on the road for 11 of their first 13 games. And they started the season against Atlanta, Cleveland, the Dodgers, the Padres, the Cardinals, the Padres. And like, the season was done right then. So maybe, just maybe, this soft opening and getting a chance to say, wait a minute, we're actually not the worst team in baseball. We can beat some dudes. Might give them a little bit more of a platform as the season gets tougher to have a little bit more confidence and experience and know that camaraderie is there.
I think there's a lot to that. I mean, when you look at, you know, last year being like, what it was it the first time ever that the Reds didn't finish or didn't start the season at home? You know, that was the lockout year, but you know, I just think that the positivity of opening day in Cincinnati is, you know, I think we kind of take it for granted, you know, but when you look at last year and this year and just, you know, there wasn't a ton of there was a little, some enthusiasm, you know, early on in the season last year, but, you know, looking at the results, I mean, it's amazing that, you know, basically, so the Reds last year won their third game. So the Reds are right now, as we talk on April 5th, are 3-2. They won their third game on April 24th last year. They won their fourth game on May 7th. So let's just appreciate how, you know, I think that was a big storyline we were following coming in of, you know, hey, would David Bell do this again? It was such a low bar to clear, but they've definitely cleared it. So, you know, I think that let's just kind of keep it up. And, you know, hopefully that means that this season will be less miserable.
For sure. Let's see if we can segue this real quick. For as bad as the season was last year, injuries played such a huge part of it. I mean, the Reds were decimated by injuries. Every team has injuries, yes, but the 2022 Reds were faced with more injuries than any other team, and so many of them are their key players. Knock on every bit of wood you could possibly reach to, there's no way that the injury situation this year could possibly be as bad or worse than it was last year. Right. And even if it is, to the key players that the Reds have to have, guys like Jonathan Engian, guys like Tyler Stevenson, guys like Jake Fraley, who admittedly has looked really good when he's been healthy, which just was for barely a third of the season last year. Last year would not have been that bad if all three of those guys had been healthy for a full season. Right. And the 2023 Reds are going to be depending upon them to be healthy for a full season also. Last season would not have been as bad if Hunter Green or Nick Lodolo or Graham Ashcraft have been healthy for the full season. None of them were. They all missed some time. The Reds are banking on a lot of guys who have never played full 162-game seasons to be healthy for all of those. And those are five, six guys, I guess, who they're counting on. And if they are, I mean, if they are healthy for this year, yeah, there's a lot more promise than there ever would have been. There's a lot of things that could have been different last year if that six-some had stayed healthy throughout the entire season as well. But we're going to get a chance to find out, because that's not just the promise of this team. That those are the anchors of this team. They really truly are. And you know, how well they can continue to put games together and pile them up, I think will go a long way to determining whether or not the Reds can, A, if they can discover what they really have in a big enough sample to make determinations for the future, but also to maybe surprise some people, because there is talent. There's a lot of talent in that, those six names I mentioned right there. And that doesn't even get to Spencer Steer and some of the TJ Friedl, some of the other guys who have shown what they can do when finally given a chance to play out there. So, from a positivity perspective, there haven't been a whole lot of things that we hoped would go right that have gone wrong, you know? Yeah. That's not to say things haven't gone wrong. And I guess that's what we'll wrap up here with, is that the weak spots on this roster, the spots that we looked at the start of the season, we're like, that's not going to work. I don't know what they're thinking about there. The back end of the rotation of the bullpen has been
exactly what you'd expect.
Exactly what you expect. And it's worth giving some credit to Luis Sessa here, who pitched pretty well last night in five and a third innings. But he did so as the fifth starter, when in reality he's supposed to be the third best reliever. You know, like that's if taking him out of the bullpen to put him in the rotation, it gives you something in the rotation, but it takes a bullpen that's already just beat the hell up and takes one more dependable arm out of it. So,
and I think that, I think that's a good point. Like this, and when you put that guy in the rotation, you know, you're not getting 7-8 innings out of that guy. You're getting 5 1/3. And I think that's probably pretty much what you're going to be able to expect from him. You know, maybe he gets to 7 once this year, but, you know, I think most of the time you're going to see him in that 4-5-6 range. And when you put someone like that, you know, bring them from the bullpen to the rotation, you really tax that bullpen, and that you end up with that so much more stress on that bullpen, because those guys have to cover a lot more innings.
Which isn't so much of a big deal when you've got a guy like Luis Sessa in the bullpen who can go 45 pitches and pitch two innings two, three times a week. But so, it's like
you need that guy in the bullpen, though.
Exactly. It's a double whammy there.
You'd rather have that guy in the bullpen if you can help it. But
if you can help it,
But, you know, I feel like that it was something that I think Luis Sessa had kind of asked for, that opportunity. And, you know, I think he's shown himself well. If he can continue to put up the line of the 5 1/3 and two earned runs, and you know, you have the relief behind him that can help kind of pick up the rest of the game, you know, I'm fully in support of keeping him in the rotation if he can kind of continue to do what he's doing.
Yeah, for sure. Like, let's be frank here. I should qualify all this. Luis Sessa is not the problem here.
Yeah.
He's been very serviceable and has been malleable as hell.
So yeah,
he's
for sure.
In all sorts of roles and has done an incredible job. And I think that's the kind of thing, as he, you know, I mentioned there aren't a whole lot of pieces on the Reds that aren't necessarily long-term pieces. He's nearing free agency also. And I think what he has shown and his versatility and his ability to be successful in those roles, he's going to get paid this offseason by somebody if he keeps this up, regardless of which role he finishes in, because we know he can be an effective reliever. Now he's shown he can be more than that. More power to him for taking that on. I just wish he wasn't tasked with so much at this point. Right. And, you know, he can't do it all by any means. You look at what the Reds did and did not do this winter. What they did do on the pitching side was bank incredibly heavily on guys who were injured, with histories of being injured, coming back and being big, big parts of all of this. And I think that's the onus of why we're talking about this, because there are no Justin Dunn. There is no Tony Santillan. There's no Lucas Sims. There's no TJ Antone yet.
Luke Weaver. Guys, too.
Luke Weaver, the one
who was supposed to be in the rotation.
The one guaranteed money signing that they actually doled out back there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of reasons why the back of the rotation and Luis Cessi coming out of the bullpen mix, that's all been in flux. So it's hard not to put on the I told you so cap when injuries were the reason why we didn't trust us in the first place, and injuries are the reason why it's in a very iffy spot right now, because that's where it is. And some of those guys will be back sooner than later. You know, Santillan apparently is throwing again, and I'm pretty sure he was actually picked up on the AAA roster along with Nick Senzel yesterday. So he's a guy who might see sooner than later. We were still.
Yeah, I think he pitched yesterday, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, he pitched yesterday. Game, so. Weaver's back throwing bullpen sessions again, so hopefully he's going to be back soon. So,
Other than Dunn, it doesn't really seem like there's any long term waits at this point.
Dunn and Antone, two 60-day IL guys.
Who knows when Antone's coming back?
Who knows when TJ?
I don't know if we're ever going to count on him.
TJ coming back from second TJ is that's a tough one. But.
That's his name. That's can't really,
but
can't argue.
Yeah. So the Reds are going to have to weather that storm, and I'm not really sure exactly how it's going to go, you know, because the one thing you don't really want to do, and we saw it on opening day with Hunter Green getting pulled after 83 pitches, opening day, there was an off day scheduled the next day. So if ever there was a day to go to the bullpen early, it was that day. But you're not going to be able to lean on this bullpen. You're not, there's just not a lot of, there's not a lot of guys you can lean on down there. And when they finally,
right now, what, there's maybe three or four guys.
Alexis Diaz is great. I really like what he brings to the table.
Given what guys like Derek Law have done and, I guess you can kind of count on that like a little bit, but yeah.
I think
everything else is, you're kind of, it's a lottery ticket. Every game and every inning, really.
Without the roster pulled up in front of me, I'm trying to remember exactly how many guys are down there that the Reds either signed to minor league deals or that they signed, brought in, designated for assignment, and then put back on the roster when nobody claimed them.
It's all of them.
I know
every single one. I think
I know that DFA'd Joel Kunal and Buck Farmer, and they both of them went unclaimed and both came back to the system and eventually got put back on the roster.
Gabriel was a spring guy.
He was a spring guy.
I have no idea where Fernando Cruz came from.
I know he not pitched in the majors before he was 31, I think.
Until I saw him come out of the bullpen on opening day.
So, I mean, there's some promise down there. There is. I mean, some of these guys can throw hard, but... Yeah. There's a reason why a lot of other teams had taken passes on these guys. And
to your point, I mean, it really is, once you get to that stage of a game, you don't have the kind of, you don't have the game plan, going forward once you take your starter out. And so, which is especially troublesome with just this young roster.
Yeah, I mean, the young three,
pitching staff, all like, second-year guys.
The last thing I want is watching Graham Ashcraft, Nick Lodolo, and Hunter Green throwing 112 pitches every start because they've got to get through the sixth.
Hunter Green grinding it one out and, ended up giving up five or six earned runs and, where he should have been out a while ago because he didn't have it. But you didn't have the arms to. I mean, I think that what we'll end up seeing is the just constant rotation of arms in the bullpen. We've already seen it, even just today, right? With Kevin Hergett, I think they brought up.
They did, the option Joel Kudel after Joel had to mop up last night. Yeah.
So I think we're just going to see a pretty active I-71 between Cincy and Louisville.
Yep. The only thing that I think would obviously kick that door down is if guys like Andrew Abbott and guys like Brendan Williamson can can hit the ground running this year. And we've not had a chance to really see them yet. And we will, because minor league season, I mean, AAA started a couple days ago when Reid was cooperating, but the rest of minor league season will get going here soon. And those are guys who I think will eventually impact the big league roster if everything goes well at some point this year. But it's, you know, while you're waiting for them to get seen for the first time and you're seeing the obvious flaws in what the Reds have right now, it's hard to kind of twiddle your thumbs and wait for that, because it's a pretty glaring weakness right now, which, you know, fortunately for rainouts and off days and everything else, it looks like, well, for one, the Phillies game was supposed to be tomorrow. The Phillies home opener has already been called due to rain. So it's going to be a Friday game now. So we'll have a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series in Philadelphia after the Cubs game got canned today, which means, despite the fact the Reds are leaving Great American Ballpark, heading out against a team that made the World Series last year and then spent $300 million on Trey Turner, they're going to have Green, Lodolo, and Ashcraft lined up to go against that roster. So,
And a rested bullpen,
which hopefully they won't need as much as I'm sure they're going to need, but they will be rested for that. So, I mean, 3-2 Reds team, I think, given everything that we just talked about, positives, negatives, frustrations and flourishes and everything else, it's hard not to be pretty satisfied with a 3-2 start.
I mean, would have told you that the Reds would be 3-2 at this point a week ago when, you know, we recorded before opening day, I think you would have taken it.
I would have said kick ass and thank God that I waited 12 months to start redoing a podcast and timed it for this start, because anything less than that would have been so frustrating. So, yeah. I'm glad about the way they played. And admittedly, at times they looked like the better team against Pittsburgh. They did. They really did. And despite the bullpen's implosion in the second game against the Cubs, when Luis Sessa walked off the mound, they had a 3-1 lead in the sixth inning against the Cubs after making the right calls and coming back to win the night before. So there's ample positivity there. I'm excited about a lot of what we've seen, and we haven't even really talked about, you know, some of the other guys, guys like Spencer Steer, who really his patience at the plate and his ability to hit balls out, at least out of Great American Ballpark, has been tremendous so far. Tyler Stevenson's been like the fifth best offensive player so far this year, but he's looked good.
He's living up to expectations, you know, not and being a big part of this offense, just like, you know, I think we were hoping he would. So,
and we haven't even
it
gotten
took us, like, what, 32 minutes to even talk about him. So,
and we haven't gotten the inevitable 2020 season of TJ Friedl, which has been
like it, yeah,
kick ass to watch also. In the next week, we're going to get Joey Votto back. We might get Nick Senzel back, Tony Santion back, and see where things go from there. So it's, given where things were, it's pretty damn rosy watching the Reds right now.
Yeah.
So,
I feel like we're kind of playing with house money a little bit. And, you know, I think that it will be important to keep that in mind as we go into Philly on their, you know, home opener weekend.
And after they started the season really, really poorly too. They're due. They're very much due. Yeah.
I mean, right. After they just, did they just get swept by the Yankees?
Did they lose again today? I know Nolan was up.
I didn't see what they did today, but
they were 1-4 going into it. That much I know. So
yeah, I think they won. Yeah. I think they won today, but
they won today. Okay. So 2-4 Philly squad, but the Reds are going to miss Aaron Nola. I guess he might pitch, the last game of the series. I don't have that lined up in front of me, but either way, they're up against legit big league road baseball from here going forward. And we'll find out how much of this carries over. So, but week one, I'm going to chalk that up to a damn good success. So,
yeah. Even if they're going to miss Aaron Nola though, I think they'll get Zach Wheeler and Taijuan Walker at least. So,
those are the really good pitchers that the Phillies have.
Yeah. It's not going to be all sunshine and roses.
That part. Oh, got to have 5-man rotations in baseball, don't you?
Yeah.
Cool. Anything else?
I don't think so, man. Excited to kind of see how this goes and, you know, be following this weekend.
Yeah. There are going to be some rough patches coming up. No doubt about it. But yeah. I don't, at least the first week has, I think, given me the concept that while there will be rough patches, because a lot of this is just young players playing, I don't think anybody out there is overmatched. You know, they might not be great, but they're not going to be overmatched. And that just means you got to take your lumps when you take them and get back to going at it. But there's some promising aspects of this Reds club, which is very, very cool.
I mean, I think we've seen more kind of just that fight back instinct on this team than I feel like I've seen in the last two seasons.
Underdog story.
You know, exactly. Why not us, right?
Let's go. So, well, cool. Well, like and subscribe where you hear us. You can find us on Spotify, Apple. You can find us literally everywhere where they are podcasts. I learned more about that last week as we made the Walksville Hot transition over to Megaphone hosting and getting everything else listed everywhere. So you should be able to find us in all of the podcast boxes you look for podcasts in going forward. You can follow us a lot of different places now. We're trying to get some of those going as well. We actually created a Twitter handle for this particular podcast. It's at WalksHauntFFSN, which is a nod to Fans First Sports Network, which we are a part of going forward. You can read all our stuff over at Red Reporter, where we will also have these listed and linked to as often as we possibly can. Follow us at Red Reporter on Twitter as well. And we'll be in your inboxes at least once a week, if not more, as we begin the minor league season and have a little bit more to talk about with this prospect-laden Cincinnati Reds system. But for BK, I'm Wick. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week.